So from this verse, we can see that actually Arjuna is trying to speak. He is actually praying to Krishna on his qualities. So this, before we approach this verse, one thing very important that we must know. There are 10 qualities of Krishna which is mentioned in this verse. And as we all know, even as we speak, the great Ananta Sage, he's still struggling to actually glorify Krishna. He's still struggling to actually complete his chanting of the qualities of the Lord. And this Ananta Sage is described as being so wonderful that the universe that we are sitting in right now, we are just sitting in one planet, but this universe is in one of his hoods on his head. And this universe appears like a drop of water, just a trickle of water on one of his hoods. And that great Ananta Sage, till now, he cannot complete the chanting of the qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, first of all, I would like to seek forgiveness from the devotees, actually, for my inadequacy in trying to speak something on this verse. Because there are just too many qualities of Krishna. And even one quality, if we take and speak until the end of days of our lives, we will definitely go back to Godhead. So we will go into the verse as proper. First of all, we must actually understand that whatever Arjuna is speaking is not on the sentimental platform. We must justify, Prabhupada is the one justifying that Arjuna is not trying to flatter Krishna. So we mustn't think that Arjuna is standing there and because he wants a favorable answer from Krishna that he should not fight, that he's flattering Krishna. It is just like, let's say we take an example of a girl and a boy. The boy goes up to the girl and says, "Oh, you are very beautiful." But you can know that there are two factors behind this fact, behind the apparent fact that he's actually telling the girl. One is, he's on a high of sentimental value. And the next fact is, he wants some material gain from the girl. But Arjuna, with all the Kauravas' arrows pointing at him, wanting to shoot him down, there is no way that Arjuna was feeling even a little bit of sentiment. So we must know that Arjuna, as Prabhupada writes, he was speaking completely from the Vedas as he accepted it and which was confirmed by Vedas and also all the great sages that are mentioned. So this point we must understand. So Arjuna, when he was glorifying Krishna, he was doing it in the perfect way because he actually accepted. So we must really understand before we go into this verse, this is not sentiment. It is the perfect science. Krishna is perfect science. And this perfect science can only be understood by a pure devotee like Arjuna. And we can only hear it from a pure devotee like Arjuna. So that is how it is passed on. I was speaking to my Guru Maharaj yesterday of this verse, and he has ordered me actually to just speak on one quality of Krishna today, because he says that there is no capacity in any of us actually to actually speak on all the qualities of the Lord, and we don't have sufficient time. Time is of the essence, as the Prabhu always say. So Guru Maharaj has said that I'm only supposed to speak on one of the qualities of Krishna, and that would suffice, and how actually we can understand the rest of the qualities of Krishna. So the first quality of Krishna is what I'm supposed to speak on. And the first quality of Krishna is, He's supreme, He's param. So this is known because Krishna has already revealed to Arjuna that He is the originator and everything emanates from Him. That is what Prabhupada writes in the Prabhupada. So Krishna has declared to Arjuna, Aham sarvasya prabhavo, mata sarvam pravartati, iti matva bhajante ima bhuda bhava samanvitaha. The key is the first two lines. Aham sarvasya prabhavo, I am the source of all material and spiritual worlds. Mata sarvam pravartati, everything emanates from me. So these two points, Prabhupada writes, is actually the meaning, and it actually justifies that Krishna is supreme. Because everything and anything that we see, even within our purview, or not even within our purview because of our limited senses, is actually coming from Krishna. And Krishna, since He has created everything, He has also created the demigods. The great demigods, the lower demigods, us, the ants, the creepers, the aquatic plants, everything Krishna has created. So surely Krishna is the only Supreme Lord in the entire creation. And this point is actually very nicely explained in this verse in Bhagavatam, is 3.2.21 of Bhagavatam. If anyone wants reference to why Krishna is supreme, this verse and the purport, Prabhupada smashes everyone and forces them to accept the fact that Lord Sri Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and no one else. So the verse, in the verse it is stated that Lord Sri Krishna is the Lord of all kinds of trees. Tree means the number. He is the Lord of all kinds of trees. And He is independently supreme by achievement of all kinds of fortune. And the eternal maintainers of creation actually worship Him. They are worshipping Him. And how they worship Him? They do so by placing their millions of helmets under the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna. So it is really a wonderful verse in how supremacy of Krishna is established in just four lines. And Prabhupada goes on to say in the purport, he clearly explains what the verse is actually saying. So it is stated that Krishna is the Lord of all the trees. And what are these trees? One of the three is the three planetary systems. Krishna is Lord of low planetary system, middle planetary system, and upper planetary system. So in that sense, everything is covered. And the second three, it is actually speaking about the three material qualities. Ignorance, passion, and goodness. Krishna is the Lord of all these three qualities, which actually are dictating how affairs run in the material world. These three qualities are the one dictating, and Krishna is the Lord of these three. And very importantly, Krishna is the Lord of the three Purushas. That is the third three. He is the Lord of Karna Dakshaya Vishnu, He is the Lord of Garbha Dakshaya Vishnu, and He is the Lord of Shiro Dakshaya Vishnu. He is actually the Lord, and they actually come out from Him. And we must also understand that in this few universe, in this innumerable universes, that actually this Garbha Dakshaya Vishnu, Karna Dakshaya Vishnu, and Shiro Dakshaya Vishnu, they are actually residing. We must understand that in these universes there are different manifestations of Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, and Lord Vishnu. So it is not only that they exist in one universe. In the innumerable universes, there are different manifestations of these entities. And the fact is, in each universe, there are 504,000 Manus. 504,000. And we know from Bhagavatam that there are innumerable number of universes, and can we imagine, we cannot even conceive, there are trillions and billions of Manus. And within all this universe, the universe is contained. And this universe is carried by Ananta Sesh. And as described, this universe where all the 504,000 Manus are, all the manifestation of Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, the great personalities are all there. And Garbho Dakshai Vishnu, Shiro Dakshai Vishnu are also in there. And this great creation, this great universe in all its opulence and extravagance appears like a drop of water on the head of Lord Ananta Sesh. And this same Ananta Sesh is coming out from that cowherd boy who is herding his cows in Vrindavan. It's really inconceivable. It's really inconceivable. That is why it can be clearly stated that Krishna's qualities cannot be described other than accepting it from people and devotees like Arjuna. So Krishna is the maintainer and everything is dependent on him, we see. And Krishna, one thing wonderful about him is everything emanates from him. That means everything is coming out. But still, he is full in the six fortunes that is establishing him as supreme. What are those? Knowledge, fame, renunciation, strength, beauty, and the riches, the wealth. So Krishna is actually the Lord of all the six. So no one can claim that he is the Lord of everything unless he is fully equipped with these six. And even though everything is emanating from Krishna, Krishna is giving everything, he is still full in these six opulences. But for people like me, especially, the one fact that establishes Krishna as supreme, because in the matter of enjoyment, Krishna is king. No one can enjoy like Krishna. We say that we are going to enjoy. We go to the cinema, we go clubbing, 1 month of salary, live life to the fullest. We go out, we spend everything. We come back home, we go to the altar, I need more money. We're in distress. So the enjoyment is just for split second. Everything is being drained out. Like the universes are emanating from Krishna, all the desires are emanating from us. All this movies, the money, everything is also going out. But one thing that does not happen to Krishna is that he is not reduced. But we are reduced. There's hole in the wallet and we have to depend on the next month's pay. And we are in distress when we go to the altar and pray. But we have never seen Krishna parking the cows in one corner of the field and going to a particular stone and saying that, Lord, please take care of the cows and please pray that I can bring these cows back to my mother and my parents are quarreling and I need some emotional backup. All these kind of things doesn't come out from Krishna because Krishna is always happy. And only the Supreme can always be happy because everything is sanctioned by him. Not even a blade of grass, not even death, not even fear moves without the knowledge of Krishna. So why does Krishna need to worry? But everybody else, Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, with all his foreheads, he has to worry. They have to worry. Just like us, they are also worrying. But the only difference is when they worry, they turn to Krishna. And they can only turn to someone who does not worry. If they are going to go to another person who worries, everybody will sit down, 4 person gather and start crying. Oh my God, this has happened, what to do? But Krishna doesn't do that. He actually provides the solution. So this fact actually proves that Krishna is really supreme. And certainly because of all these values that Krishna has, no one is greater than him. And as Prabhupada writes in the purport, this 3.2.21, I have spoken for 15 minutes. Prabhupada in one line says why Krishna is supreme. He says that because all these transcendental creators of this creation, they have to go to the Supreme Lord and worship him. And this worshipping of these creators like Brahmaji, Lord Shiva the destroyer, they go to Krishna to worship. And this fact that they worship, Prabhupada says, is not at all wonderful. It's not wonderful. We may think that worshipping, they are going to worship Krishna, great personality, worshipping Krishna is very great. But Prabhupada says it's not wonderful because it is a fact that Krishna is supreme and there is no choice that they have to turn to Krishna. So Krishna's supremacy cannot be denied by anyone. Even a layman who doesn't know who God is, by seeing the beautiful manifestation of the entire universe, the entire creation, and how even the brain works, how the flower blossoms, he has to surrender to Krishna. Krishna's supremacy cannot be checked by anyone. The person who checks it is totally out of his mind after even accepting it from the Vedas. So this point Guru Maharaj told me to explain. At one point he said that we have spoken about the entire planetary system, all the creation, Vaikuntha planets right down to the end and the aquatic plants. And that is just to describe one quality of Krishna. We had to run from Vaikuntha all the way down to the hellish planets. So with just this one point, everyone must understand that Krishna's qualities are totally transcendental and they cannot be described by any layman. They cannot be described. Even the pure devotees are struggling. But then the question arises, can we actually know Krishna? Can we actually know his qualities? The answer is actually given by the conduct and the action of Arjuna. Arjuna praises 10 qualities of Krishna because he realized it. Prabhupada writes in the purport, after listening to Krishna, Arjuna's doubts were completely clear and he accepted Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And after he accepted, he praised these ten qualities of Krishna. So Arjuna, as stated before, he didn't pray out of sentiment. He fully realized the 10 qualities of Krishna, fully. You know, the one quality which we can't speak, Arjuna fully realized the 10 qualities. How did he do it? Because he's pure devotee. But we cannot just rest there and say that he's pure devotee, he will understand. I'm just layman, so I shouldn't read Bhagavatam, I shouldn't read Gita. Just one quality, satisfied, and I will just do my daily activities. That should not be done. Arjuna is doing this because he's showing us that actually Krishna can be known like this. So that is where we come to the second verse. The second verse can be split into two parts. The first part he says, the great sages such as Asita, Devala, Vyasaha have confirmed this truth about you. And now you yourself are declaring it to me. So the first part is the great sages declaring it. And second part is, now you yourself, Krishna, are declaring it to me. So two sets. One is Krishna and one of the devotees declaring it. So we will first look at the Lord declaring it to Arjuna. So this system of the Lord declaring to Arjuna, it's actually explained by Krishna himself. When Brahma had prayed his prayers on creative energy, he wanted creative energy, so he prayed to Krishna. And then Krishna, after all the prayers that Brahmaji had prayed, he did not come out and say that, oh, these are very nice prayers. He was pleased with Brahmaji. But because Brahmaji was the first being, he had to put him in his position and say and tell him the truth of why actually you were able to pray this. And he said, Yat Chakratanga Mastotram Matkata Vyudayantika Yat Patapasite Nishta Saesha Mat Anukrahaha. He said that, O Brahmaji, please know this one thing, that I, the Lord, am present before you. And all these austerities that you have performed, and all these glories that you have chanted about me, please know that all these things that you have done is only coming up by my causeless mercy. So, it is really wonderful that the Lord is actually revealing to Brahmaji that he is the one who is giving the sanction and the mercy for Lord Brahma and Arjuna to actually pray about the qualities and describe the qualities of Krishna. And in the purport, Prabhupada writes, the devotee who desires to serve Krishna, what happens to him? The Lord as Chaitya Guru from within, and the Lord as a spiritual master without, actually what he does is he helps the devotee. And Prabhupada writes in the last line that when this help comes, the devotee can perform anything, wonderful things, which are beyond material estimation. This is key. These two words, material estimation. That means the Lord's mercy intervenes and our material capacity is actually put down. That means we break out of our material capacity to actually glorify the Lord and perform our devotional service. So actually devotional service is never performed on the material platform. We actually break out of material capacity to actually perform this devotional service, as how Srila Prabhupada is putting. And this material and this word material estimation, when we use it wrongly, is actually the stumbling block in the living entity's devotional life. Arjuna received the instruction from Krishna. He did not tell Krishna. Krishna said that, go and fight. You know, you should kill all these great generals and the Kaurava army. Arjuna did not say, Krishna, you must be joking. Bhishmadev is there, Dronacharya is there. Are you trying to tell me that with my arrows I'm going to create this? And Karna is there. He stated that he's almost or even more powerful than me. How am I going to create? You are joking. But Arjuna didn't say that. He accepted Krishna's will, and he went on to fight, and eventually he won. Why? Why did this happen? Because Arjuna did not materially estimate his... Arjuna wasn't within the purview of his material capacity. Once the Lord gave him the instruction, he knew that my material capacity will not work anymore. If anything is going to happen, Krishna is going to take care of everything. And this, in the living entity's daily life, we can actually see. Especially when the spiritual master gives instructions. When Guru Maharaj says that, Balamun, you're supposed to wake up from Makaranti. When I say, yes Maharaj, I'll wake up. And then he says, you're supposed to wake up from tomorrow onwards. Yes Maharaj, I'll wake up. But the next day comes. At 4:30 a.m, I'm sleeping. At 5 a.m, I'm still sleeping. Right up to 9 a.m, I'm still sleeping. Why? Because I didn't have faith in the instructions of my spiritual master. I was actually previous night thinking, yes, Maharaj is saying, but my capacity is what? I'm just neophyte devotee. How can I wake up? Mangalarti is for pure devotees. So this material estimation comes in. I'm working according to my own capacity, whether I will be able to wake up. But once the spiritual master, Krishna's instructions comes, the material estimation has to be kicked out. It has to be kicked out. And the transcendental estimation has to come in of how spiritual master's mercy will work and I will wake up from Mangalarti. And also another thing, whatever the spiritual master speaks and Krishna speaks is absolute truth. So we should not also think that Maharaj, you have given me these instructions. Maybe 2 months later when I am more fired up after listening to 5-6 more classes and then I will wake up from Mangalarti. This should not happen. Because spiritual master's instructions are absolute, and absolute means not relative. So in all phases of time, this instruction will carry. So we have to follow it immediately. And Prabhupada very nicely describes in his last line to that purport, even a layman can compose prayers of the highest perfection, of the highest perfection. And this is really proving the power, the gravity of the spiritual master's instruction and Krishna's mercy. And because of this fact, we must know that, like myself, I'm like a layman, but because spiritual master is giving the mercy, I'm able to perform, like speak and give the class. It is definitely not by my own capacity. Like it says that no one can glorify Supreme Personality of Godhead. But one thing we must also understand, when Prabhupada says even a layman can compose prayers of highest perfection, this sense of pride creeps in when we're able to chant verses, when we're able to sing. But Prabhupada says even a layman can compose prayers of highest perfection. So actually anyone can do it. But why we are able to do it is because Krishna has granted us the mercy. So if the one moves away from the rest of the zeros at the back, we are also queuing up with one of the zeros. We are actually nothing. But because the Lord is sanctioning, that is why we are able to pray, we are able to sing. Nothing really is coming out of our capacity. And also another point we have to remember is, just because we can sing and we can read Bhagavatam, we are not supposed to look down on those devotees who can't read and who can't sing and who can't perform deity worship. We are not supposed to look down on them. Because Prabhupada says even a layman can compose. They also can compose. But Krishna has given the mercy in other channels to them. So no one is supposed to be proud and no one is supposed to look down on devotees who can't read and sing and do other activities as much as we can. Whatever realization they have might be so wonderful that we can't even conceive it. That is the mercy of Krishna. Krishna handles that. We're just supposed to serve everyone and just seek blessings from everyone. But we should not fool ourselves then and say that I'm not going to read even Bhagavatam. I'm just going to focus on one service and Krishna will reveal it from within because Krishna is in my heart. The Brahmana who was in the temple and Mahaprabhu was walking in and seeing the Brahmana crying with the Bhagavad Gita in his hand, and Bhagavad Gita was turned upside down. And he said, why are you crying? And as we all know, the Brahmana said that Krishna's hands are being cut by the rope and I can't stand this. Mahaprabhu said that you have really understood the purport of Gita. But we know all this, but one point we slipped. The Brahmana actually had Gita in his hand and he was trying to read it. So the fact is, even though he was illiterate, he was trying. And the trying is the one that Mahaprabhu saw. It is not whether he could read. The Gita was in his hand. And he said, I can't read. I'm really struggling. And this is what Krishna is really looking out for us. It is not the material qualification. That is why Prabhupada writes in that same purport that such spiritual perfection is not limited by material qualification, but it is actually developed by one's sincere endeavor. And this voluntary endeavor is the only prerequisite. It is the only prerequisite in actually gaining the mercy of the spiritual master and the Lord. And this whole point is very nicely portrayed in the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj was a young boy, and as we all know, when he was trying to climb on the lap of his father, he was actually chastised by his stepmother, and the stepmother actually said that you can't climb on the lap of your father because you're not born in my stomach. If you want to be born in my stomach, you're supposed to go to Krishna, you're supposed to perform devotional service, and then you will take birth in my stomach, and then you can climb onto the lap of your father. That is what the stepmother said. And Dhruva Maharaj, Bhagavatam writes that he was trembling with anger, and his tears flowed because of anger. And he went to his mother and said that this is what she has said. And the mother was very disturbed. But she said, don't do anything. What your stepmother said, perform devotional service, now you go. Perform devotional service and get the mercy of the Lord. So Dhruva Maharaj went with one-pointed attention. Even though there were material considerations, still he was one-pointed in wanting to gain the mercy of the Lord. So he went. And who he met? Narada Muni. And Narada Muni told him that why are you wasting your time? You're supposed to be playing. So please go and play, you know, with all your friends, with all the balls around. Just go and play. And Narada Muni also explained that devotees are not supposed to retaliate. They're supposed to be tolerant. They're supposed to be calm. Why are you behaving like this? But Dhruva Maharaj said, Gurudev, you are great. And all your instructions I accept because they are absolute truth. But I am not in the right frame of mind to accept this instruction. So he was very one-pointed in his determination. And Narada Muni saw this one-pointed attention. And then Narada Muni said, I will now reveal to you how Krishna actually looks. And Narada Muni reveals to Dhruva Maharaj how Krishna looks. And then he said, I give you the process also on how to meditate on this form. And then by absorbing the form of the Lord and the process that Narada Muni had given, Dhruva Maharaj goes to the jungle. And then what he does is, he meditates on the Lord. For 6 months he meditates. And at the end of the 6 months, the entire breathing process of the entire creation were locked up in the pores of Dhruva Maharaj. And due to that, no one, even the demigods, couldn't breathe. And they all ran to Krishna. And they said that, Krishna, we can't breathe. We have never experienced this before. Please help us. And Krishna said, be relaxed. You know, I will take care of this. And Krishna, it's explained that in Dhruva Maharaj's heart, Krishna was actually manifest. He could see. But suddenly, Krishna disappeared. And Dhruva Maharaj was greatly disturbed. He broke out of his samadhi. And when he looked, he actually saw the transcendental Lord, just the way Narada Muni had actually explained. And when he saw the Lord, Bhagavatam writes that Dhruva Maharaj was inexperienced. And so he was in an awkward position, so he could not pray to the Supreme Lord. And this Dhruva Maharaj, who controlled the entire breathing process of the entire creation, is described by Bhagavatam as being inexperienced. I can't even control my breathing for 15 seconds. So if I am going to speak anything, then it is really a folly actually. It is only by the mercy of the great devotee like Narada Muni. And what happens? Why can Dhruva Maharaj speak? The Lord touched him with his conch shell. And then Dhruva Maharaj spoke. So this also, as Prabhupada writes, Arjuna was also speaking by the grace of the Lord. So Dhruva Maharaj was also speaking by the grace of the Lord because he was touched. There is no other way Dhruva Maharaj could have spoken. Even though he controlled the entire breathing process of the entire universe, there is no way that we can actually speak about the glories of the Lord. So this is the position of the living entities. We must understand that I can be doing book distribution and a very difficult person comes to the book table and then I somehow or another try to sell a book to him. I cannot say that because of my past experience, I tried to do some maneuver and sell the book to him. It is not that way. It is because Krishna willed for this difficult person to come and for the difficult person to actually receive this benediction of Srila Prabhupada. So whatever we pray, we sing, everything is actually coming from the Lord. So what we must develop because of this knowledge that Krishna's grace is coming, that's why I'm able to perform, is the sense of gratitude. This gratitude we must have. And that is why Arjuna was able to actually sing this glories of Krishna. Because he was so grateful that Krishna had actually revealed the four seed verses and he had told him everything. So Arjuna being so grateful, and he discharged devotional service with a grateful mood. This gratefulness is the one that manifests as devotional service. So when we sing, when we cook for Krishna, when we are putting deities to rest, when we are doing arati, we must do it with a grateful mood. Krishna, because of you, I am able to do all this. And then that mood of that performing devotional service does not become a routine check. Because we are grateful, then the feeling comes up that Krishna, I am really doing it for you because I am so grateful. And then it becomes sweet. And then reciprocation with the Lord is there. Devotional service is supposed to be sweet, not stagnant, or not. It's not supposed to be a routine thing. It's supposed to have feeling, and this feeling comes by gratefulness. And this is very nicely portrayed by Narada Muni in that verse. Etavadukho pararamatannaha bhutam nabolingamalingamishwaram aham chatasmaihi mahatamahiyase Sirshavanamam vidade anukampitaha. Narada Muni says that Krishna, you are unseen by the eyes but personified by sound. And then, but the key here is Narada Muni in his last two lines. He says, feeling a great sense of gratitude, I bow before the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then in the next verse he prays, he says that because of doing that, I was able to chant the glories of the Lord persistently, incessantly, by ignoring the formalities of the material world, by being freed from pride, and by being freed from envy. So he could perform his devotional service in a perfect way by just feeling a sense of gratitude towards Krishna. So as Prabhupada writes in the purport, we are actually dependent on Krishna. And this fact, everyone including the demigods fail to see, and that is ignorance. And Prabhupada writes that this ignorance will be driven out because of devotional service. So the cycle is there. We perform devotional service, we will see that ignorance is driven out, we will see that Krishna is actually the doer of everything. And when we see that Krishna is the doer of everything, gratitude comes in. And when gratitude comes in, we perform devotional service. So this cycle is there, and this is kicked off just by understanding the fact that Krishna is the doer, and we have to feel very grateful to him. So like Dhruva Maharaj was feeling, he regretted that, why did I pray for this? In front of the Lord's transcendental form, my desires appear like shattered glass. That's what Dhruva Maharaj says, it appears like shattered glass. But why did he feel this? Because of the devotional process, the penance. That was Dhruva Maharaj's devotional service. So when he performed devotional service, everything was clear, and then he could see the Lord in his heart and also outside. But then we come to the next point of that verse. As Arjuna says, Atita Devala and Vyasa have confirmed this truth about you. How did Dhruva Maharaj actually see the Lord? Because Narada Muni had seen the Lord in his previous life. Narada Muni had seen the Lord within. The Lord appeared because of his penance. And Narada Muni actually captured the Lord in his heart. And what Narada Muni did was two things he gave to Dhruva Maharaj before he went into the jungle. One is, he described all the descriptions of the Lord. He said that the Lord has raised nose, his nails glow, he has the Srivatsa marking, he has the Kaustubha jewel, his crown is actually shining. All this he was saying in detail. And what Dhruva Maharaj did was, he received this knowledge through the ears and he captured Krishna in his heart. And the next thing Narada Muni did was, he gave him the process of actually performing this devotional service. So two things Narada Muni gave. One, description of the Lord. One is the process. So by absorbing these two, what he did was, he went to the jungle, he performed, he saw the Lord in his heart. And the best thing is, he actually saw the Lord for a longer period of time than Narada Muni. Narada Muni saw the Lord for a moment, and the Lord disappeared from his heart when he was performing penance. And the Lord told him that, I regret to inform you that in this life you will not see me again. But by the mercy of Narada Muni, Dhruva Maharaj was able to have darshan of the Lord even for a longer period of time than his own spiritual master. How much is the mercy of Narada Muni? This is really the mercy of the spiritual master. Nothing else can actually portray this. So we must understand that even in Gita, this point that Arjuna accepted Krishna as actually supreme, he accepted only after Krishna revealed the facts to him. But when Krishna revealed these facts to him, Krishna was not Supreme Personality of Godhead. What was Krishna? Arjuna accepted Krishna as Guru. As my spiritual master, you reveal this fact to me. So Krishna never deviated. He took the position of spiritual master to instruct Arjuna that these are the descriptions of God and all these things, I am God. But he explained as spiritual master. And after he accepted the fact from the spiritual master, then he accepted Krishna as God. So there was no bypassing even in the Gita. Because Krishna took the position of Guru to actually explain to Arjuna. So this fact is put forward very nicely by Krishna. So the main point is actually, as Prabhupada writes in the purport, is the acceptance. Arjuna's doubts were all cleared because he accepted Krishna's words and then all his doubts cleared. And then he could sing this praise. Then he could realize who God was. Because he accepted, doubts cleared, he could express that who God was because he fully realized. So this acceptance of the spiritual master's instructions is the key also. It is actually the main key which in how actually the Lord's mercy flows. And because we don't accept this instruction, that is why the living entities are actually struggling in their material life and they are also struggling in devotional service. The spiritual master gives an instruction. We don't accept it. When we don't accept it, it actually means we deny the existence of the Lord. We really deny the existence of the Lord. Again, the example of Mangalarti. When spiritual masters wake up from Mangalarti, a person like me does not wake up from Mangalarti in the morning, struggling to wake up. But if really Ladu Gopal in my altar room were to wake up and say, Madan Mohan Das, you're supposed to wake up now and worship me, will I even think of not waking up? If the deity of Krishna had actually woken up and woken me up, would I ever think and say, Krishna, 5 minutes, I'll be there? Or if my spiritual master had walked into my room and said, Madan Mohan Das, wake up and worship Krishna now, would I say, Maharaj, give me 5 minutes, I'll be there? You know, maybe you sing Samsara Dhava first. No. It is because the faith in the acceptance of the spiritual master's instruction is not there. And by not actually accepting the instruction, I have come to believe that Ladu Gopal is brass. So this is directly linked to the fact that when one does not accept the instructions of the spiritual master, he completely denies the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And I walk into the temple and say I'm a devotee of Krishna. When I don't even accept that Krishna is existent, I deny his existence. So then I say, oh Prabhu, I'm struggling. Mangalarti is so difficult. It's for the pure devotees. The pure devotees are saying they are struggling because of their pure devotion. But I am saying I'm struggling because I'm materially estimating of how, why, whether I can wake up, but not because of what my spiritual master is saying. So that is my struggle. So actually, in one of the lectures, Indradyumna Maharaj said, this struggling in devotional service is there, but it can really be realized by the pure devotees. Devotees like me, Indradyumna Maharaj was saying, that it cannot be said that we are struggling. We are struggling because we do not accept the spiritual master's instruction and we do not bury our heads in Bhagavatam. That is why the struggle is there. It is not by humility that people like me are accepting this thing called struggle. It is not out of humility. It's because of the failure to accept. And accepting Krishna is not something casual. It is supreme science. It is perfect science. And it can only be understood, like how Guru Maharaj understood, through the agency of Narada Muni. So, as we can see, we must accept on the spiritual master and we should not concoct on our own. As Arjuna accepted and he prayed what Asita, Devala and Vyasa had actually confirmed, he did not pray anything new. And it is very nicely stated why we should actually accept what the spiritual master or what the Acharyas are saying. Because if we do anything other than that, then it's concoction. In 6.29, Daksha prays, Yajyan niruktam vachata nirupitam Yaksha Vivamana Sotayasya Mahabhut Swarupam Gunarupam Itata Savai Gunapaya Visarga Lakshanaha. He says that anything asserted by material intelligence or concocted within the material mind or expressed by material vibration or experienced by material senses has got nothing to do with the real nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So when we don't accept the instruction of our spiritual master and we do things on our own, we're actually moving away from Krishna. We're actually performing service to go towards Krishna. But the moment we actually say, that spiritual master's instruction take a step back, we actually move away. So we can say that Vritasur and Gajendra, without spiritual master's sanction, without spiritual master's mercy, they actually glorified Krishna because he was demon and Gajendra was animal. So how did they do that? Even they, in those forms, they actually didn't bypass spiritual master. Who was Vritasur in his previous life? Chitraketu Maharaj. And Chitraketu Maharaj received this knowledge from Narada Muni. He had received this, so he remembered and he could pray. And even in Gajendra also, he was in his previous life Indradyumna Maharaj. And in the 8th canto, 3rd chapter, it is described, before Gajendra starts his prayers, Bhagavatam writes that Gajendra had learned this mantra and in his life as Indradyumna Maharaj. So this word learned means that he had actually received this prayer. So even in those forms, no one bypassed spiritual master. Spiritual master is actually supreme to actually receive the benediction mood of devotional service. So it is not by one's material qualification or great capacity to quote verses or burying one's head in Bhagavatam, doing 24 rounds, 25 rounds a day. That is actually not the means in actually approaching the Lord. We have to do that. But all these things are just secondary to the spiritual master's mercy. If spiritual master's mercy is not there, we can bury our whole bodies in Bhagavatam with all the pages torn out, and we can bury everything, and we can buy, we can chew Bhagavatam even. We can't do anything. We can't even move a single brick without the mercy of spiritual master. So the story of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was the greatest scholar of his time. And he was giving a lecture, actually, on why Vaishnavas are greater than Brahmana. This famous lecture everyone knows, and how actually the sadhus, the scholars also who were present there, accepted that Vaishnavas are actually greater than Brahmanas. And after Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had finished this lecture, in their own way, last time how they would give a standing ovation is, they would scream, sadhu, sadhu, they would accept that person as sadhu. After he had given the lecture, they would accept that person as sadhu, and that is the standing ovation that they would give. So they were screaming, sadhu, because he had broken their ego and said that Vaishnavas are greater than Brahmanas. But as they were screaming, all the scholars of those times were screaming, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the greatest of scholars, asked them to move aside. And everyone moved aside, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur pointed down the aisle, and there was this personality sitting at the end of the aisle, and he was sitting among the slippers. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that because of that man sitting there among the slippers, I'm able to actually speak this and actually convince you. And who is that man? Gaur Kishoredas Babaji. And Gaur Kishoredas Babaji, as we all know, he could not read much, he could not write much, but Gaur Kishoredas Babaji was a pure devotee of the Lord. And he was the spiritual master of the greatest scholar, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did not even consider his scholarship to be one of his capacities. He said that only by the mercy of my spiritual master was I able to convince you. So then, actually the concluding point of this verse, we must look at another side of why actually the mercy is flowing from spiritual master, the grace is actually coming from Krishna. So all this we absorb and we glorify Krishna, we perform service, we sing, we chant, all this is being performed. But why Arjuna was able to do it with feeling is only because of one point. Arjuna was not envious of Krishna. Arjuna was Krishna's friend. But never once did Arjuna think that Krishna's power, right, actually is slightly better than mine. He did not even think that for one moment. He did not. And because he did not envy Krishna, and Arjuna did not envy any other devotee, that is why Arjuna could accept what Krishna had said, and he could sing them with feeling, even though all the arrows were pointing at him, right in front of the battlefield of Kurukshetra. He could sing it with feeling because there was no envy. The living entities may say that there is no way I'm going to envy Krishna. Krishna is too great. But the fact is, when the living entity actually envies the devotee, he is directly envying the Lord. If let's say I have a lot of envy for Vrajhari Prabhu, Then another devotee comes and glorifies Vrajari Prabhu. And then I go up, yes Prabhu, Vrajari Prabhu is great. I say, but in my heart I'll be saying, yeah, right. It's natural. So the glorification has actually no feeling. And when we sit in the altar, and when we sing to Krishna, when we sing to spiritual master Samsara Dava, and actually sing the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, we are crying to the Lord. But why the feeling doesn't come is because there is some envy somewhere of another devotee. So when there's envy, then the hypocrisy comes in. And with hypocrisy, the living entity can never glorify the devotee, and he can never glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead in full capacity, with feeling. And devotional service is about this feeling. So devotional service is lost to the living entity when he actually envies the devotee. And that is why, when actually Krishna blew his conchal, Devadat, in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he actually smashed the heart of the Kauravas. But the Pandavas were totally relaxed. Why? Because the Kauravas were actually envious of Arjuna, and they were envious of Krishna. So they had to be fearful. And this point Krishna says in Bhagavatam, Atmanasya parasyapi yakaroti antarodharam tasya vinna drisho mrityur vidade bhayamulbanam. So Krishna, what Krishna does is, Krishna says that if a person actually discriminates on the bodily platform of another person, or he sees him with a differential outlook, that means one justice for me and different set of rules for you. You know, that differential outlook is there. And then Krishna says, I come as the blazing fire of death, and I enter into that person's heart as fear. So that is how Krishna was actually entering the hearts, the Kauravas, as fear. And he actually entered the hearts of the Pandavas as Shaitya Guru, just because of one fact, that the Pandavas were not envious of the devotees, and the Pandavas were not envious of Krishna. So then, the pure devotees, that is why they are never anxious, and they are fearless. The pure devotees are fearless and they are never anxious. Why they have these two qualities? Because let's say we call our Guru Maharaj and say, Maharaj, I have distributed 15 Gitas today. He doesn't say, no, that is not good. You know, because I have only distributed 20. I mean, I have distributed 10. He doesn't say that. He's so pleased that my disciple has actually distributed 15 Gitas. The spiritual master never envies, the pure devotee never envies another devotee. That is why they have no anxiety. And they are completely fearless. Completely. Completely fearless. Because of that one fact, they are not envious. So, all these points can be concluded. The grace of the Lord has to be there if we want to pray. And this grace of the Lord can only be there if it's received by the agency of the spiritual master. And the agency of the spiritual master is actually attracted when we actually serve the spiritual master. And when the spiritual master's eyes turns onto the disciple, then Krishna's grace flows through the spiritual master. So actually the process is once again kicked off by actually the devotee himself. The cycle of Guru Parampara is kicked off by the devotee who's actually trying to understand the process of Guru Parampara. When he kicks it off, the mercy flows. So the voluntary endeavor must come from our side, must come from the living entity side. It does not come from Krishna. Krishna's mercy is costless, but we cannot say that I will just sit without any cause and costless mercy will flow. There is no way. Thank you very much for very patiently listening to the class, and I'm really sorry if I offended anyone in the course of my discussion, and I'm sorry that I wasn't able to fully discuss the topics of the verse. Hare Krishna. So if there are any comments or questions, and the devotees.
Thank you for the wonderful classroom. The position of spiritual master, as you were saying, that you know, spiritual master is there. We have our own Diksha Guru and Shiksha Gurus. Our spiritual master can be a Diksha Guru and a Shiksha Guru, but there can can be many Shiksha Gurus for us, other spiritual masters, or like Ramanujacharya, he had 11 Gurus. So we must not forget that the mercy can come from any other Gurus. Our Guru mercy is there, but also the other Gurus are also there. Their mercy is also there. With their mercy also, we can just go back to one. We can attain the pure love of Krishna. So, this thing has to be understood that mercy can be from any sadhu, any guru or Vaishnavas who are actually in the pure devotional platform. And what we are performing now is the Bhakti Rasamrita Sundar says that we are into devotional service in practice. So devotional service in practice goes into the two forms. One is the Vaidhi Bhakti. We were talking about practice rules and regulations. And then that's when it becomes the mercy of the Vaishnavas, Guru and Vaishnavas. So we must say Guru and Vaishnavas. So that's very important. But then it goes into the Raganuga Bhakti. So that's practice, devotional service and practice. And then there's devotional service in ecstasy, which has another four divisions. And there's devotional service in pure love of Godhead. That has another six divisions. So what we are practicing is we are trying to be into go into Raganuga Bhakti. And then of course our goal is to go into the pure love of Krishna, this devotional service and pure love of God. But that mercy can come from any Vaishnavas. It can be a guru, it can be other Vaishnavas who also in the pure devotional platform. So that is why we must beg mercy from every devotee there. Because they can actually give us that pure devotion to Krishna. Hare Krishna.
This is a nice point by Panasukha Prabhu. We must understand that when we say spiritual master, means Guru is one. They are all manifestations of Lord Brahma. I mean Lord Balaram, I'm so sorry. Lord Balaram. So they are all coming from that one Lord. And so Guru is one. And the disciples of these Gurus are a reflection of their spiritual masters. And the mercy from the spiritual master also flows through the disciples of these Gurus. So actually, as Guru Maharaj always says, everyone is pure devotee except for oneself. Is there anything else that devotees?
Hare Krishna Madan, thank you so much for such a nice class.
Thank you.
Many points you brought up that really very thought-provoking. Prabhuji, about the point which you brought about anything that is concocted in the mind and nothing to do with Krishna, then anything that is. Just thinking, Prabhuji, about the implication of what you said. That means, Prabhuji, that anything, all the lyrics that we hear outside, all the movie songs, they have nothing to do with Krishna. And all the fiction books that are written, if you really apply this verse in that sense, it has nothing to do with Krishna. So, but it means if you really apply it in that sense, we get that everything except the Shastra that I explained, everything else has nothing to do with this. And Prabhuji, just wanted to get a clear understanding about the last point which you mentioned, very last point too, about the causeless mercy and the interior. Can you just please elaborate further on that, so that even though the mercy is causeless, the interior is required?
Prabhu is asking, this mercy of Krishna is causeless. So if it's causeless, then there shouldn't be any cause on our side. We could just sit and the causeless mercy will flow. So why should there be actually voluntary endeavor? So the example is given, even in material sense. When we want to please another person we love, voluntarily we do something. Voluntarily we do something in order to get the favor of the other person. So mercy is causeless, Guru. Mercy is definitely causeless from Krishna, because out of our own capacity, we cannot do anything that Krishna does not have, because he is full in six opulences. But what the Lord actually sees, the Lord is actually yearning only for one thing, and that is the love. And this causeless mercy, the Lord does not discriminate and give. That is the real meaning of causeless. When we voluntarily endeavor, when the love flows to Krishna, and then naturally, the mercy just pours out. When he sees that my devotee is loving me so much, and then the mercy just flows out, and that is the meaning of causeless. Krishna does not see that he is doing something, so because of that, because with a cause, I have to give this mercy. He doesn't do that. It is a natural flow from Krishna. So if you really see, there is no cause to actually Krishna giving that mercy. He is only seeing that love that the devotee is offering and nothing else. So this is, to my limited understanding, Pastavi Prabhu, would you like to say anything?
You already explained it nicely. But yeah, I think Krishna himself tells in 10:10, Desa Devadrittana. Why? What is he trying to tell? He's saying that the devotees are so in love with Krishna, he gives the understanding by which he can come to. That's his mercy, because devotees in 10:8 also it is, and 10:9. He explains who he is, how he is so supreme, and because of understanding this, once you know that he is the supreme, Prabhupada explains in the Prabhupada very nicely, once you understand he is the supreme lord, you definitely, naturally, you will perform devotional service. And because you perform the devotional service, Krishna is pleased. Because he is pleased, he gives you the understanding and clears everything, all the ignorance, the previous verse. He clears that. Once he clears that, then you, the love, Priti Purvaka. Very, very simple. But we don't have, Prabhupada saying, we don't have that love or the inclination to surrender to Krishna. We don't have that. We don't want to surrender. We always want to, we think we are self-centered. We think we are the greatest. You ask anybody, everybody say, I am the greatest. I am the best. No one else is the best. But we have to now come out of that mood and say, Krishna is the best. He is the supreme, like he said. All the opulence is. Once you accept that, not theoretically, this is Prabhupada, it's not book knowledge, you know. It's not theoretically. You must realize knowledge. Realized knowledge comes by performing devotional service to your Guru Maharaj and all the Vaishnavas. And then Krishna says, okay, this person is now ready to see me. Because Krishna does not want you to go back to him and say, okay, go back to him and give me the mercy and say, oh no, Krishna, you're not the supreme, I want to enjoy myself. That he doesn't want. He wants to make sure that you are ready. Once you're ready, then only he gives you the Tesam Evalokam Parsam, the shining lamp of knowledge, to make you become loving to him. And that, therefore, there's a reciprocation. There must be reciprocation in devotional service. You cannot just have one-way street, you know. It's two-way street. That is love. That is called, that is why it's called Bhakti Yoga. It's linked to Krishna, and Krishna is responding to our love to him. If we don't love him, how is he going to love us? He's waiting. We have to turn our heads and see him. Let's go.
Guruji, concerning Krishna's mercy, there's one nice purport that Prabhupada speaks, Prabhupada writes about Krishna's mercy that I wanted to share. It's in 3rd canto, 2nd chapter. It's after two verses after the 21st verse that you quoted. And here, Shukadev Goswami is telling us the wonderful example of the causeless mercy of Krishna was exhibited when he delivered Putana. Despite the fact that she came as a she-demon and she was determined to poison Krishna, and she pretended to behave like a mother, and she pretended to behave like a nurse to Krishna. And despite such pretense, you know, she actually really wanted to kill Krishna. So her intention for the Lord was anything but glorious or anything but truthful. She was deceitfully trying to kill the Lord. But despite that, even though Krishna sucked the very life out of her, he, by doing so, he also completely purified her and he allowed her to attain liberation. And Prabhupada writes in the purport where after Shukadeva Goswami has glorified this highest mercy of the Lord, Prabhupada writes, I'll just read it because it's very nice. Lord Krishna accepted the motherhood of Putana because she pretended to be an affectionate mother. So, even by pretending to be a mother, Krishna was kind enough to grant her some benediction. Then Prabhupada writes in one of his lectures, speaks in his lectures, imagine if we just even tried, even if we pretended, supposing we carry Bhagavad Gita everywhere, and everyone thinks, oh, I'm reading Gita. But just by carrying the Gita also, by pretending also, Krishna becomes kind. Eventually you have to think, what is this I'm carrying, you know, I have to look at it, and you start reading. So this is Krishna's mercy. So Prabhupada writes here that he accepted the motherhood of Putana because she pretended to be an affectionate mother, allowing Krishna to suck her breast. Then he writes this wonderful point. The Lord accepts the least qualification of the living entity and awards him the highest reward. From the least qualification, Krishna just looks at someone's least qualification and he gives him the highest reward. This is the standard of his character. That is Krishna's character. Therefore, who but the Lord can be the ultimate shelter? So this is a very nice point actually. This is one of Bhaktivedanta Maharaj's favorite verses also. Few times he quoted this when he was in Singapore. And the purport is worth looking at. And this is exactly what Bhaktivedanta Prabhu is reminding all of us. That the important thing about this verse is that we must go back to the seed verses. If we follow the seed verses systematically, then devotional service must come naturally. This is very wonderful. Thank you, Prabhuji.
Thank you, Prabhupada, for presenting as well. Just wanted to ask some clarification about this mercy point. As such, there is no example that when devotee tried from his side and he didn't receive mercy. So we can say that when endeavor is there, it's a kind of compulsory mercy. So is this causeless still applies to the mercy, or it's whenever you do endeavor, it's a guaranteed mercy?
The fact that the devotee actually wants, expects the mercy from Krishna when he performs something, in that sense is already material. So Krishna is withdrawing because that is his causeless mercy. He withdraws because he knows that he is doing and he is having something in his mind. And he is having something in his mind, so he wants me to give, and that is what he counts as mercy. So Krishna withdraws that. And that is actually Krishna's causeless mercy, because he says that he is still performing devotional service, but he wants something that is actually going to be bad for him. But that he counts as mercy. But I can see the overall picture. So that is the causeless mercy of the Lord. You ask, but he doesn't give because he knows it's going to be bad for you. That is causeless. He doesn't need to do that. But because he is our father, he does that. So that is causeless. I mean, just to what my understanding is. So is the after.
Actually, when devotee approaches Krishna with material desire, Parsathya Prabhu, that they quoted very nice verse, I think 519.27 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Krishna, in turn, out of his causeless mercy, Prabhu, he gives his lotus feet. So eventually he realizes that, you know, he becomes a devotee. In Dhruva Maharaj's case, you know, initially he approached the Lord with material desire. When Lord appeared in front of Dhruva Maharaj, what did he say? I was in search of, you know, pebbles, marbles, you know, the glass, you know. But finally I have found the supreme jewel. How cool I was. So that's, you know, Krishna's, you know, godless mercy. So even if devotee is having material desire, but when Lord's audience he obtains, either through pure devotee or directly, in case of Guru Maharaj, his great personality, his eternal associate, so finally he realized that how these things are insignificant, you know. It's like something going to a billionaire and asking, give me 5 rupees. He realizes, you know, Krishna is as a Paramatma in heart. He makes to realize. Today's one thing I have to say about Prabhu's class, one comment. Sadhu, sadhu. Very nice class, Prabhuji. And Prabhuji asked very wonderful question, really very nice question. And I thank Devkinandan Das Prabhu. He gave wonderful, pointed example about Putana. Putana is really, you know, she was a she-demon and she came with intention to kill. And finally, you know, Lord delivered her. Lord gave her position as a dhatri, as a nurse, in not in Vaikuntha, in Goloka. And this verse is very nice, you know, just, you know, for pleasure of the Supreme Lord and the devotees, came from my mind. Why this verse is very important, what Prabhuji mentioned? Because it's mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita about one of the very great devotees, Pundarik Vidyanidhi. When Pundarik Vidyanidhi was, you know, seated in his house very opulently, and he was looking, you know, in the mirror in between, and Mukundatta brings this devotee, Gadadhar Pandit. Then he has described his great devotee, you know, so he was a bit bewildered. And then he chanted this particular verse about, you know, how great is Supreme Lord, about, you know, he even delivered to a demon like Putana. And basically, in Srimad Bhagavatam, this is conversation between Uddhava Maharaj and Uddhava Maharaj and then Vidura. Vidura when meets Uddhava, then he asked about Supreme Lord. Then he responded by this verse. Aho bakiyam tanakal putam jingham sayapa yadapi sadvi lebe gatim dhatri uchitam lebe gatim dhatri uchitam tatvanyam kambadayalum sharanam brajem kambadayalum sharanam brajem aho bakiyam tankal kutam. Uddhava Maharaj is telling, Uddhava Maharaj is telling to Vidur that why I will not remember that Supreme Lord, Kamva Dayalum Sharanam Brajam, who is most merciful, you know, who is the most merciful Lord. Why will not I will take shelter of his lotus feet? Aho bakiyam sankal kutam jingham saya payadap sadhvi. She came with intention to kill the Supreme Lord. What she put on her breast? Kalakuta. Kalakuta is one of the, you know, very deadly poison. Deadly poison. And then she came as a sadhvi. Sadhvi is mentioned like chaste woman, you know. That mode she came. And she came with intention to kill the Lord. But and then what gave in return, Lord gave it to her. Because she came, I mean, indirectly she rendered service. Lebhe gatim dhatri uchitam tatvanyam. What he rewarded in return? He gave her a position of dhatri, nurse in Goloka Vrindavan. In fact, in Brahma Vaivar Puran, it is mentioned, Bhagavad Puran ends over there that what happens to her and how she goes back to her, and then, you know, these Gopals come and Nanda Maharaj associates come, finally gives final cremation. But in Brahma Vaivar Puran, further it elaborates that, you know, there from when while the burning is going on, you know, the very nice aroma is coming from the pyre. There comes very transcendental aeroplane from Goloka Vrindavan, and she regains her spiritual position. In spiritual body goes to Goloka Vrindavan. There, Krishna is sitting with Radharani, and then he becomes so happy. So Radharani asks, "Why are you so happy?" He said, Putana Mata is coming. Putana Mata is coming. So Lord Krishna is really very kind. All glories to Lord Krishna. Very nice class you gave Prabhuji. It's as if I am hearing Devkinandan Prabhu few years back. Hare Krishna. He told him, Mahavishnu Goswami Maharaj Gurudev ki.
Jai Gurudev Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki. Jai Gaur Abhimanyu.